Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon, the podcast where fascinating people meet. I am Madam Perry, but you can call me Jennifer, Jan, JP, Perry, I don't care. I'm just happy to be here to be your host, your group mistress, and your spiritual advisor. And so much has been happening. I want to thank everybody who is has been subscribing on different platforms. I know there was an episode last week that people were having a difficult time finding on certain podcast apps, but I think that was because it was rated R. So you know how that is, but you still look it up. That's the show with Emily P. Bush, and since she normally has children's books when she's on, is a little different for grown-ups, but of course you can still find it at like Blog Talk Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so forth. And that's fun. Also, for the people asking me about Women of Science and when's it going to start, for the last few years, but twice this year at steampunk conventions, I've done my presentations on women of science from the 19th century and prior to that. And yes, it is going to be a YouTube channel, and we should have a date. I think it's going to be late June, but we're going to launch the Women of Science channel so that people can learn all about the women who invented things, who discovered things, who did marvelous things, and you just didn't know because they didn't get the credit because, well, they were women, but we know about it now. And I am so excited and glad that people are asking me about it. Now, tonight's podcast, this is a guest that's been on before, and we are all superbly thrilled to have her back. She's got a brand new book. I can't wait to hear about this because she's always got stories, a little bit of truth. Now, maybe sometimes it's things that's happened to her, things that people she's met or knows, but she's always got enough truth. So even though it's fiction, you feel it and you feel the realness of it. She's the New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of Days of Wonder, With or Without You, Cruel Beautiful World, Is This Tomorrow?, Pictures of You, Girls in Trouble, Coming Back to Me. I think I could spend the rest of the show just naming all these, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce her back into the genie bottle again. Best-selling author Caroline Leavitt. Caroline,
I am
welcome
so
back.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you so, so much for having me. I know I had to cancel because I had COVID, but I was so determined to come on here and to talk with you again because it's just so much fun.
Okay, good, good. Well, everybody's excited, as I mentioned. And as I was starting to tell you before it was started, remember, I've had 40 years of herding dogs, so if I don't mention something that you wish I would or ask, you can always herd me into it, and I'll be happy you did. So yeah, going through this, I said, you've got titles of yours that have been optioned for film, translated in different languages, condensed in magazines. So many of your titles were Best Books of the Year and Indie Next Picks. You're a New York Foundation of the Arts Fellow, shortlisted for the Maine Reader's Prize, a Goldenberg Fiction winner, and may I say two more things? Well, first of all, Days of Wonder, the publication date is April 23rd, am I right?
Yep, that's it.
But it's already on the pre-order best-selling list, clocked in at 48, the first day of pre-ordering. All that, and kitchen. I mean, you know, what more do you want?
Not much more.
I mean, you've got a lot more cred. Listen, I can go on about your Today Show, chairman of Canadian TV, all the things you've done. But you've been, your followers have been getting sneak previews of your kitchen as it develops. And it's so exciting.
Yes, it is. Our kitchen was really a disaster, and we had it for years and years and years, and the towels were chipping, and when the cabinet door started falling off, we said, we have to do something. This is just like, it felt like we were living in a disaster. So, yeah, we hired a contractor, and he just put it together for us and did it really quickly. But there were some bad days because we had to turn my office into our dining room because it was the only place near a water source. So, and it wasn't so much fun cooking dinner on hot plates. And you know, we ate out a lot.
But in the end, it's worth it. It's worth any aggravation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, in fact, the day that it was finished, we thought, well, we should really cook something here, but instead we went out to eat, so. We're not thinking
about
it.
It's brand new. You don't want to mess it up. I get that.
Right, that's right, that's right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, when you were on before, we were talking about with or without you.
Right.
And that put me on a Caroline Leavitt trip. Next thing I got was Cool Beautiful World. I mean, that just grabbed me in. And I think because some of the situations in the story with or without you were things that either you or a friend of yours had gone through that you could write about it so
right.
realistically.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like even if the thing hasn't happened to me, it's usually I felt the feelings of whatever the character is. But yeah, sometimes stories just find you.
Your newest book, Days of Wonder, the short description is it's about a troubled young woman, early released from prison, struggling to reinvent herself as she searches for the child she gave up. And then grapples with the mystery of an attempted murder she and a now-vanished boyfriend supposedly committed when they were 15. And
right.
I thought, okay, this is an interesting subject because there's so many things. And I listened to an interview you did. I think that might have been on A Mighty Blaze, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And about different people that that maybe have killed someone or have been accused of killing.
Yeah.
That I think the story you Leslie Van Houten was the person you brought up, which I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was, you know, she was this wonderful person and everybody loved her. And they kept saying, oh, you have to meet her. You'll love her too. And I met her, and I did love her, and we became really close friends. And it wasn't until, like, 2 years after I knew her that she told me that she had to tell me something. And I thought, oh, my God, what is she going to tell me? She told me when she was 15 years old, she had actually committed a murder, that she absolutely had done it, that she was just a wild teenager, and she went to prison, and she was early released. When she got out of prison, she was just determined to, you know, remake herself. She changed her name. She moved away. She took on a new job. And she was living very quietly and, like, you know, had friends and everything else. Then when she was in her 40s, somebody found out who she was, and they outed her. And she lost jobs. She lost friends. She lost relationships. And she had to do the same thing again, where she just moved away, recreated herself. And that was the thing that, like, those two things just haunted me because I kept thinking, when did she get to be forgiven? I mean, she went to prison. She admitted she did it. She remade herself. She was a benefit to society. And she can't tell anybody her name, you know, even now. And I love the whole idea of, you know, reinvention. And I really wanted to write about it, but I didn't want to make her life miserable. So I had to turn it into, you know, I swore I would never, never tell her name, which I never, ever will. And I had to turn the story into something completely different. So I thought, well, you know, what do I like to write about? So I like to write about kids. I like to write about Romeo and Juliet kind of stories. So I turned it into this story of these two kids, a boy and a girl, and they both are accused of this attempted murder of the boy's father, but, you know, they're kids. They're not sleeping. They're sneaking around. They're taking drugs. They don't remember what happened that night. And I just wanted to write about it. And the more I wrote about it, the more interesting it became. And, you know, I did the thing with them. I knew I had to speak to some women who had been in prison or who were in prison. And that's mm-hmm. where this woman, Jean Tronstein, came in, because she taught this class called Changing Lives Through Literature, where 10 women on probation, plus a judge, plus a probation officer, all gathered in this room, and they were talking about one of my books. And it was so strange, because I don't know who was more anxious to be liked by the other, the women watching me or me watching the women, but it was just incredible experience. And the thing is, I'm still friends with some of these women. I still email them to see how they're doing. But they told me these incredible stories of what it was like in prison, which is nothing like Orange is the New Black or any of the stuff you mm-hmm. see on TV. It was like very, very different. The women all really helped each other, and they bonded, and for fun, they would take dish liquid and spill it on the floor and do a slip and slide. It was just really, really fascinating.
It's never really like TV, and it's a shame when people think something like, well, okay, Orange is the New Black, that's what they're all, that is what everyone is like, you know, where everybody comes out the same way. So
no,
that's another
promise that the women made me promise not to write it like that. And I said, well, tell me your stories and I won't. I'll tell your stories. And they were really open about it. It was amazing. These women were so honest and so they wouldn't talk about what they had done, but that was okay. I told them I didn't really want to know. That was for them to tell if they wanted to. But they were really trying. They were really, really struggling to create new lives for themselves.
So how difficult was it for so many women to open up to you? Did it take one or two for everybody else to think, oh, okay, well, this is all right. I can talk to her too.
Well, you know, that's such a good question, because I got there, I was really, really nervous. And the women came in and they all would put candy and snacks in the center of they were all in a circle, in the center of the circle. And they were sort of studying me until I went there and I took three Snickers bars, and they liked that I took three candy bars. But I tried to relax them. So I told them that, you know, they asked, how did you get here? And I said, well, my dirty little secret is I never learned how to drive. I just can't do it. I tried, and I took driving lessons. And finally, the instructor pulled me aside and said, you know, Caroline, some people just aren't meant to drive, and I think you're one of them. And they liked the story. They just, you know, they started to laugh and they relaxed. And it was the more that I told them, you know, how I had screwed up in life, the more they relaxed and they felt that they could tell me, you know, their stories. And also I told them they could tell me anything they wanted about my book. They didn't have to say they liked it. And sure enough, one woman spoke up and said, I really hated this book. And I said, okay, that's all right. You know, not all books are for all people. And they liked that. They saw I wasn't going to jump on them. I wasn't going to judge them. And I didn't. You know, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was just really interested in them. But it was hard. It was hard to break the ice. But I've done it three times since, and I'm actually going to go to another class next month, I think. And I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm sorry, what was that last part?
I'm really looking forward to doing another class and meeting a new group of women. They're just so interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I've talked to other authors. I don't know if you know Jen Lancaster.
Yeah. I know her name.
And she, you know, I don't know if she's done classes, but I do know that she sends books, hers and others, to women in prison. And she said, yeah, it's important to do.
It's a great thing to do. And the other thing they told me that I thought was really fascinating is apparently, like, women knit in prison. And you would think that they wouldn't be given knitting needles because they're, you know, you could stick them in somebody's eye or whatever, or use it as a weapon. But the prisons found that the women who knit got calm. You know, even women who might have been violent, they just calmed down when they were knitting. And the other thing is that some of these women would make, like, baby clothes, and they would sell it to the guards. So that sort of created a relationship between, you always think, oh, the guards are so terrible, and the women hate them, and the guards hate the women. But it wasn't necessarily that way for these women, because they would be making these cute little booties and baby hats and just give them away.
Yeah, I think that's good, because I mean, otherwise I think unless you have something that you could do or learn that you would enjoy,
right,
that would be useful to you, not only intellectually or as a possible way for a livelihood, but something that you just enjoy for the sake of it and the satisfaction and the art of it. Yeah, otherwise you would go crazy. I think I would.
Yay. Yeah, they all said that the biggest problem in prison isn't, you know, everybody thinks, oh, it's violence, this and that. It's not, it's boredom. Everything is really regimented, and you're doing the same, it's true, and you do the same thing every day. And at least if you're knitting, you're producing something, and you're being creative, and, you know, it opens women up so you can talk to other people there.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Like I said, listen to the interview on A Mighty Blaze. And let me ask you, did you start that channel?
I did. It was the day of lockdown, and I was supposed to go to Texas to speak in front of 100 librarians. And my publisher called me up and said, nope, everything's canceled. Your whole tour is canceled. Man, I was really upset. Because I had practiced this speech complete with hand movements, and I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to take a video of myself doing this speech, and I'm going to send it to my publisher, Algonquin. So I did that, and they called me up, and they said, that's a really good video. We're going to send it to all the libraries. So I started to think, well, maybe I can help my friends. So I went on Facebook, and I said, look, I'm starting something. It's called the Nothing Is Canceled Book Tour, and anybody can be on it whose tour has been canceled. And all you have to do is get on camera for 1 minute, tell me about your book. You have to call out another author and, you know, mention their book, and you have to mention an indie bookstore, too, because they're suffering. So
yes.
I thought I was going to get 20 people, and I got 200. On the first day.
What?
And I couldn't keep up with it. Yeah, I got, like, everyone was freaking out because they didn't have tours and they didn't know how they were going to publicize their book, and it was the pandemic and everyone was scared. So I kept on doing it. That's all I did. It kept me from going crazy during the pandemic. And after about a week, I got the media took notice. And I got a call from the Washington Post, and they said, what are you doing? And I said, I really don't know, but I'm just doing it. And he said, well, keep doing it. So then I got a call from Jenna Blum, she's a New York Times bestselling author, and she called me up and she said, do you need help? And I said, yes. Oh, my God, I really need help. And Jenna is really good with stuff like marketing and production, and she knows how to run businesses. And together we started A Mighty Blaze. And she sent out all the press releases, and within weeks we had like the New York Times calling us, and Poets and Writers and all this other stuff, and very, very famous writers, you know, lend their support. We had John Irving wanted to come on, and Elizabeth Stroud, and all these famous writers, and Judy Collins, and it was overwhelming for me. I just, you know, I'm kind of an introvert, and all of a sudden I had to be an extrovert and interview all these people, and it took me a while to gain my footing. But A Mighty Blaze is now, it started out with just Jenna and I, and now we have something like 35 other people working for us. I believe it's all volunteer, and they're doing things like They're running book festivals, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's amazing to me because I never started anything like this before, and I've never really, you know, it's like I've never been a boss of any sort. So it's very, very strange and wonderful.
That is fantastic. And, yeah, folks, it's you can find this at, and it's easy to remember, amightyblaze.com. And
that's right.
That's all you got to remember. And also make sure this is also a good time to say that since a lot of my listeners, now this is a live broadcast. This is March 26, 2024. But a lot of people listen when they're jogging or when they're driving to work or to school.
Right.
They tell me. So that's why I say I will always make sure that you have all the links to the guests and how to find them and their work on all of my social media, not just Madame Perry Salon, but on the purple, on the personal too, on the purple one. Yeah, on the personal social media too, so that you can find A Mighty Blaze or other work by Carolyn Leavitt. And that's carolynleavitt.com. But I'll be sharing it,
yep,
spelling it, everything. That's so cool. Because when I first saw that, now I was looking up and I saw that, and then I saw that, you know, you and Jenna put that together. And that's an important thing because, yeah, everybody was changing everything for everybody.
Yeah. It was scary. It was such a scary time. But we were busy. We put in 18-hour days when the Blaze first started, and it was great because you couldn't go outside when the lockdown started. You had to stay in your house. I think it could go out if you had to go to the pharmacy or a doctor or something. But so my days were really packed and really busy, and it really saved me.
You know, kidding. When everything hit, it went down. And when I remember, I was at a steampunk convention, and in Tucson that I go to every year, it's called Wild Wild West Con. And I remember the night before I left for that one, I told my husband, there's a place in Tucson, maybe you've heard of this, Carolyn, it's called Town Tucson.
Yeah.
Where a lot
of
movies and TV shows have been made. It's just a Western town
for
filming. But it's also open for tourists to come through, you know, like a little family day. So we would have it there once a month. And I remember the night before I left on that weekend, I told my husband, because he didn't go, but we're in bed, he's reading, and I said, and see, honey, since we're in costumes, but we're in a little Western town, we don't, instead of a hotel, we don't look out of place. And my husband just turns a page, keeps reading, and says, well, honey, you keep telling yourself that. So he keeps me laughing. So, but then we were there, and then the last day we left, time changed, and then by the time everybody got home, everything was shut down. We even had a steampunk band from Italy that was there. You know, by the time they got home, those people were seriously locked down.
Right. Remember the washing groceries? Remember we used to wash our groceries? You weren't supposed to, like, take them in unless you wipe them down. It was so weird, and you couldn't find masks. So I was just wrapping, you know, tights around my face when I had to go out. It was just very...
Yeah, I think I even had a real 80s flashy party dress I had gotten, I think, at a Goodwill, because I was going to take it apart to make a costume for something. And I took the part that was over the bust that was and made two masks out of that.
So smart of you.
It was flashy, but, you know, people didn't make as much. Anybody that would have made fun of a regular mask was probably too shocked to say anything.
Yeah.
So it was kept going. So that was all fine. You know, at the time, I had authors that were clients, you know, as a publicist. And I've always been, they would say, well, what do we do now? I go, well, you know, I've always been a fan of the unconventional book tours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be in a bookstore. You can go to a wellness center,
right,
a wine bar, jazz club, wherever. And they would. I said, where people don't expect you. So, yeah, so you and Jenna, God, that's a lot of work. But it says you've got at least 30 or more volunteers. And that's people believing in your project.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really important thing to do, and it's still like, you know, it's 4 years now. It's incredible. It's totally incredible, and it's still like, and we're all friends, so it's really, really nice too, because it's, you know, it's like a nice community. And they know that, it's very funny because they know that even though I'm the co-founder, I never come to any of the meetings. I never really do any of the strategy. All I like to do is I like to interview writers, you know, and talk to writers. And so that's what I do. And Jenner's really the CEO of it now. So.
Okay. Oh, now, by the way, this is a good time to say that I can't hog you, that if you have a message, a question, comment for Caroline, you can give us a call here in the studio at 646-716-9922. Or if you in a place where I think we've all been there, Caroline, where you can't make a phone call. And you can always message me. You can if you send me a message on Facebook, either through Madame Perry Salon or Jennifer Mott at Perry, and I will be happy to read it. So, yes, if people listen here, Michelle says, awesome. James, who's listening in Tucson, says, he said a big heart and says, great. And
great.
And Megan, the producer, she doesn't, usually she'll check the audio in the beginning and then that's it. And then she says, this sounds great. She is hilarious.
Oh, I love that.
And she's going, I am such a fan, but she's hilarious. So, yeah. Where we go? Oh, you know what? Here's another thing. When people listen, and this is one thing, too. I had people tell me this after the last time you were on, and they started reading you, and they were saying, you know, she just seems like just the nicest person. And I said, well, now I'm telling people, if you want to just feel like Carolyn is your buddy, you can also go to Psychology Today.
That's right. That's right.
Right. You thought I was going to give away your personal information to people? No, 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 no.
No, I feel like my life is an open book. I don't, you know, I'm not going to give anybody my bank account numbers, but, you know, anything on social media is fine. And, yeah, Psychology Today is, that's sort of like my emotional diary where I talk about everything that's happening to me and who I am, and so people know that I'm neurotic and I'm shy and hopefully I'm funny. And,
yeah.
So, you know, life is short.
But yeah, so your blog in Psychology Today is called Runs in the Family.
Yep.
Essays on becoming who we are. And I mean, these are short little nuggets. It's like something you can just sort of pack and take with you if you're reading somewhere in line and you want something to entertain. This is the best. And it's stuff that makes us all realize, yeah, I feel that way too. I went that way.
Yes. That's exactly right. That's the whole thing. I think the whole thing is that nobody is alone. We've all felt, you know, horrible or lonely or bullied or estranged or whatever else. And I think when you say it, it stops being, you know, embarrassing to you or hurtful to you, because there are other people saying, oh, yeah, me too, me too, me too. And that's what, I don't know, I just find it thrilling.
So, yeah, it is. And people need to feel, sometimes people think they're the only ones that have such certain feelings or certain fears, or what will people think of me if they knew? And I remember once I was telling somebody, a funny story about one of my brothers who had been in a lot of trouble, and the youngest brother kept saying, I can't believe you tell people that. I can't believe you tell people that. I go, what? It wasn't me. Why should I be embarrassed? You know, it wasn't me.
Even if it was you, you shouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, you know, you did something. So what?
Yeah. And because I can't believe, it's just crazy stuff, you know. And I just said, well, why? Why should I be? I didn't
That's
do anything
right.
wrong. So, yeah.
That's
if,
right.
And then I always tell them, look, if it makes somebody laugh.
Right.
If it makes them laugh, it makes them feel good. That's my mission is served, you know.
Yep. Yep, that's right. That's right. I always say, I'm always trying to do that. Like even in the interviews on Mighty Blaze, sometimes there'll be somebody who's very serious, and I always feel like, well, I have to make this person laugh. You know, I have to, like, doesn't matter what I do, but I just have to make them laugh. And it's frustrating if I can't. You know, I want, it's laughter just connects us.
Yeah. Yes. I think it connects the soul, and I don't know, there's probably some other kind of ways inside that I don't have the words to describe, but there's just something that does in the soul and lightens you up somewhere, and it's good and healthy. And so, yeah, so give me an idea, because I had a serious guest on recently, and it was somebody that's there. There's a certain PR or publicist that will send me their guest, you know, have this person on. And sometimes when I do, I want to know it'll be somebody so serious, and I'd be going, honey, I respect your work, but you got to, you know, lighten up so people can talk to you.
Well, it's harder when you don't have visuals, because when you have visuals, I have a lot of, like, weird things in my office. So, like, you know, if it's a visual, sometimes I can get somebody to laugh if I'm playing with a slinky, or, you know, or I'll just show them something that I have, like one of the crazy toys I have in my office to get them to laugh. Or I don't know, it's just when they're serious, it makes me less serious. So I just keep hoping that I'll rev them up so that they'll laugh too.
That's good. Okay, you just kind of leave me befuddled there. See, you're making me, and I'm already crazy. So, what are some of your favorite things about when? I mean, you know, you're on big major TV shows, Today Show and everything. You're a New York Foundation of the Arts Fellow in Fiction, finalist at Sundance Screenwriters Lab. And by the way, sometime soon I want to talk to you and Gina Sorrell, who was also on the show about a week or two after you or before last time, about your screenwriting work. So, you know, I'm going to have to.
Oh, great. Oh, I'd love to. Gina's one of my closest friends. I love Gina. And, we started writing scripts together, and that's really, really fun, really, really fun. But, Hollywood has broken my heart many times. I actually had one of my earlier books was going to be optioned by Madonna, and the producers, as her directorial debut, and the producers called me up and said, you can't tell anybody. You cannot say anything. If magazines call you or reporters call you, you have to direct them to me. And, you know, so I waited and waited and waited. And then a week later, they said, well, Madonna decided to do something else. So now you can tell whoever you want.
Oh, so thanks a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's like, thanks a lot. Another time I had a movie that was just about ready to be made, and then the director ran off with the producer, and that was bad. So you never know.
And that's the thing. I mean, working on, when I first started in PR, I was working on HBO documentary premieres and the publicity for those. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, there's all the, you know, NDAs and everything. And then we also worked, the woman that hired me, we also worked on some things, some more serious things. I don't know what to say, like nonprofit things to help people after, mostly after Hurricane Katrina and stuff. And, you know, of course you've got to, you know, the NDAs and the confidentiality and all that's there for a reason. But I remember this one TV station, I tried so hard to get them to pay attention to the PSAs. You know, we had a sports celebrity on it, and we'd worked so hard, and it was doing so much good for people. And this, they wouldn't have anything to do with it. And then they made some big scandal about, oh, this is out here, but nobody knows about it. And I go, yes, you do, because I told you, but you can't, you know, what can you do? So,
it's a whole different world. It's really, it's just the movie in Hollywood is a whole totally different world. So I just, you know, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, I'm learning how to write better scripts than I wrote before. So that's something.
And are the scripts you write, are they like your books stories like that about people? And...
Well, there's like I did an original script with Jean Sorrell, who's also a really fine novelist, and we just wrote this pilot for a series that was going to be set in New York City about real estate and people and spirituality and all this stuff. And we got a film agent, and the film agent took it to a meeting and came back and said, well, could you change it from like real estate to like Russian mafia? And I said, I don't think that'll really fit. It was so crazy. It was like, no, I don't really think that'll fit with the thing. And then the film agent said, well, you know what, I don't think this is going to do anything. I don't think it's a very well-written script. So we said, okay, and we sent it to Sundance, and it won a finalist shot. It won a finalist. It was the same script as the agent said, oh, no, it's not really very good. You're both novelists. You're not screenwriters. But that's why you should never listen when somebody tells you about something that you can't do, because you can always do it. Just, you know, go ahead and do it and see what happens. Don't listen when people say no.
Yes. Always. When they say no, they don't know.
They don't know.
And
yeah.
They don't know. You know it in your gut. You know if the story feels good.
Right.
You know if it's right. You know. With something that's good that you have produced and you're proud of it and you know it's going to mean something to a lot of people, don't listen to those nattering nabobs of negativity.
That's right.
So,
you're right, because you do have a core where you know what things are and what you can do. And, you know, all they can say is no to you, and then you just keep going on and doing what you want to do. But always ask. And always try. That's my motto.
Absolutely. All right. Peter out there listening in Chicago, did you hear that? Okay. All right. Again, if you want to talk to Caroline, the number is 646-716-9922. And I have a very lovely person from the Atlanta area calling in now.
Oh, great.
Michelle, come on in and say hello to Caroline.
Sure. Hello, everyone. Hello, Carolyn. Hello, Jennifer. It's good to talk
to
you too. Hi.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am so excited about you being on the podcast this week. I went to Barnes & Noble and went up to the lady to say, I need to find this book. And she said, well, you will find it in April when it comes out. I was thrown down.
I know. It's so weird because they do all this promotion before the book's even out. And it's frustrating because I feel like, well, why don't you give – I wanted the publisher to give me like 100 books so I could hand them out to people, but they wouldn't do that.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Well, it's sort of like the Cadbury bunny eggs that we eat at Easter. They're worth the wait.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I was supposed to do that. I don't know. I'm not advertising. I was going to get canned the moment I get on it. But,
I think that's a good analogy, Michelle.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I can come out with a good one every once in a while, as my husband will say. But, Carolyn, not that I'm old enough to read AARP, because I'm not. That's all I am. But I know you write for the Ethel.
Yes. Oh, it's the best. It's the best gig.
Oh, and you probably know what path I'm going down here. Could you please tell us a Walter and Mother story?
Yes. That's my favorite story of all. My mom was jilted when she was 19 by someone she really loved. And so she quickly married my father, who was this horrible brute of a man, just a terrible, terrible man. And my mom stayed unhappily married because that's what she did in the 1950s. And my father died when he was 57. And my mother said, that's it. I don't want anything to do with men. I don't like them. And, you know, she didn't really like my boyfriend. She didn't like my sister's boyfriend. She didn't like our husband. It was just like men were like no good whatsoever. So when my mom became 90, she really couldn't live alone in the house, and we really wanted her to go to independent living. And, of course, she did not want to go. But she went, And she would call me every single night saying, I hate this here, take me out of here. And I was thinking, what should we do? What are we going to do? And then a week later, she called me up and she sounded different. And I said, what's going on? And she said, I met this guy. His name is Walter. He's well-read. He's charming. He thinks I'm wonderful. And we're falling in love. And I said, oh, great. I'm so happy. And you know what? They did fall in love. They were together. They were inseparable. They were totally inseparable. And they, you know, they were physical too. They had a physical relationship. And they loved each other, and it was wonderful to come and talk to him. And my mom changed. She became much nicer, obviously, because she had love in her life. But when Walter died when my mother was 98, and my mother was just about starting to have dementia, and my sister and I agreed that we weren't going to tell my mother that he had died because she was starting not to remember stuff. So every day I would talk to my mother, and she would tell me that Walter had come to see her. You know, or we would ask, how's Walter? And she would say, oh, he's great. He's just the nicest man. He's just, you know, I kiss him all the time. And, you know, my mom lived to be 101. And when she died, she thought Walter was beside her. And that was just the greatest thing. It was the greatest gift to me and to everyone to, like, watch them. You know, it was just sort of like this promise that, you know what, love can happen at any time to anybody. And it's, you know, you just have to be open to it. And I just love that story. I loved that story so, so much. And I was so glad my mom had it, that she had, like, the last years of her life were a paradise, absolute paradise for her.
Oh, I just think that is so, I mean, there's a sadness about it, like, even now, the first time I read it, I had tears in my eyes, but just now, hearing you say it from your heart, you know, like, you know, you're the person who lived it, it's just very amazing and touching, and I think that, you know, there should be a lot more Walter mom stories in the world, and so I really appreciate you sharing that.
I think so too. I think so too. And I just, it's my favorite story. It's just my favorite story in the world. And I think it can happen to other people. I mean, it was just a gift. It was just a really great gift.
Yeah, I think it's great. And the fact that they were, you know, they had some hanky-panky moments, and I think that's amazing too at that age.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have details. I asked my mom, but she didn't tell me.
Well, you know, I can't imagine at any age, talking about that with my mother, or my daughter if I had one, but still, you know, I think that's just an amazing love story. And so as my husband and I just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary, I'm thinking, you know what, so, you know, there's still love out there. We just, you know, some of us get it at 93 or a little earlier.
I think that's so wonderful, because especially after her not having a marriage she enjoyed and just her attitude toward men, something that just made her flutter inside and made her feel good.
You could see it in her face. She looks beautiful. I mean, she just looks radiant because she was so happy. We were happy for her. I mean, it was a wonderful thing to be able to have that. I was so glad you read the story and liked it.
Yes, I did. Yes. And I'm sorry, you know, they do let us 24-year-olds subscribe to the Ethel. I just want to let you know that. Yeah, I think I pushed the envelope a little bit on that one, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what? The only thing about the Ethel that I don't like is sometimes their illustrations look too like stereotypically old
yeah.
lady or something. So I wish they would. I keep trying to get them to jazz it up a little bit, but it's a fun place to work. It's really a fun place to write for.
It's so good that when you're, you know, what is it that they say that when you're doing work that you love, it's just not work at all.
It's not
so
work.
I hope it stays that way for you. Well, thank you for letting me hang out a little bit, and I cannot wait to get my call that my book is in.
Oh yes, yes. And let me tell you, the first one I read was With or Without You, and then cruel, beautiful world. Let me tell you, Michelle, you will, I would say this to you if Carol, if it was just you and me somewhere.
You can say anything.
I would say, okay, I would say, you really see it. I mean, I could feel that I was, it's like I was in the room watching what went on.
Good.
The way she creates the stories, and then the character who, after she's been in a coma, when she draws, she seems to be able to draw pictures of people, and you can see the, whatever emotion the person's having. I mean, I could see these things happening.
Wow. Yeah.
That's what happened, right? Yeah.
You know, Jennifer, if you have me reading any more books, you and I are going to have our very own book club or something. I've got 4 books teed up because of you now.
Okay.
And
well,
the effort.
That is wonderful. And, hey, you can also, you know, did you hang on to your AARP issue with Ringo Starr on the cover? Because that's the one that's on my coffee table now, okay?
I did.
Okay. All right.
Well, take care, ladies. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michelle. Okay. Oh, that was lovely. That was so much fun.
She is a lovely person. Yeah, and she's, when I mentioned, she said, okay, I've got to find the book. And I thought, well, I could tell the book's not out now, but then where would be the fun of discovery and going to the bookstore?
Right.
And yeah.
Right.
So wonderful. Tell me now, since you've got how many days? You've got just about a month, just under a month,
just about a month,
literally, until Days of Wonder is out. Oh,
it's nerve-wracking. It's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking. I mean, you never know, like, there's all kinds of worries, like, well, what are people going to think? And what if you do an event and only 2 people show up, and they showed up because they thought you were a different author? And I mean, there's all kinds of, like, stuff. And then there's worrying about, like, what if I miss my train? And it's, you know, I'm a girl who, like, I'm a woman who likes to stay in my house and, you know, work.
So do you, are you going to be going out in public on a tour?
Yes.
For this?
I am. I'm going to Missouri for the Unbound Book Festival. I'm going to Tampa for a book festival. Then I'm going to Connecticut and Vermont and New York, of course, and New Jersey, a couple of festivals. And there's 23 events. And every time I see those 23 events, I think, this is too much.
No.
I don't have 23 outfits that are going to look right. But Thank goodness for earrings.
The earrings, yes. And I love
the
that
earrings,
story,
yep.
Too. I loved reading about the earrings.
Earrings,
the psychology today.
You wear earrings, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I
they
did.
They make a big difference.
They do. They speak so much. I didn't for a long time because my dad would never consent to me having pierced ears, and then after that I was kind of scared. But then again, remember those 80s TV shows where everybody had to clip on earrings, and every time when they go answer the phone, they pick up the phone,
yeah,
and they reach in the hand,
yep.
Yes, pull the earring off, yes. That was me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I finally got my nerve up and pierced them. So, but yeah, that's a great story. But yeah, just some jewelry, yeah, earrings. It just kind of sets the mood.
Yep.
Are you one of the authors that has earrings made with little tiny images of your books?
No, I'm the kind of author who has earrings that are like big and garish. You mentioned steampunk, and my steampunk earrings are my favorite earrings of all time.
Ooh.
They're like, they're big, and they're metal, and they look weird, and I just love them.
Now, are the picture that was in here, was this how piercing my ears may help make me whole, were those actually a pair of your earrings?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so, no. Well, maybe they were. I don't know. I have 70 pairs of earrings. And They're all like in egg cartons in my drawer, so I can see them and pick which ones. And some of them are good luck earrings, some of them are not. Some of them I end up giving to friends, and but I just can't resist a good pair of earrings.
Well, no, and again, it's like, you know, remember, I think the movie Tu Wong Fu.
I love that movie.
And remember, there's a part where one day they get up and they go, "Today is say something with a hat day."
I love it.
Every day can be say something with earrings day.
That's right. That's right. You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. That's actually my most careful decision about getting dressed in the morning is what earrings. Which earrings do I feel like wearing? Because you're right, today is going to be wearing these kinds of earrings day. And it all matters.
It does. It does, absolutely. And so that makes me feel not so bad now that I know if I go walk around a certain counter, the jewelry counter or somewhere, that I go, there she goes again. Or she got her Fitbit on? Is that why she's walking around? What? But, yeah. So, And now that I take care of a 7-month-old baby and a 2-year-old child for a niece and nephew, their kids, I have to think about what will they like that the kids like, but not so much that they yank it off.
That they're going to yank it? Yeah, I was going to say. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, when my son was a baby, yeah, they yank and it hurts.
No, you can't. So now your son Max, has he ever gone with you on any of your book events, your author?
Yes, he did. He's been coming. He came on one of my book events when he was 5 years old. And he doesn't travel with me. He's 27, so he is going to come on his own steam to my book event in New York. And he's great. He's like funny and smart, and we go to horror movies together because my husband wants to see horror movies. But yeah, my son and I love them. Do you like them? Do you go to them?
You know, I hadn't gone and watched anything for years, and then I began meeting so many people who wanted to be on the podcast that were horror writers or publishers, and I think, well, I've got to read it before I do. And then I thought, okay, they started drawing me back in with style. So yeah.
I just like, you know, I like to go with my son because, you know, it's just a bonding thing, and it's really fun, and we like to be scared, and then you go out in the daytime. We never go at night. We always go in the daytime. So you can walk out of the theater, and it's bright. Yeah, because if you go out at night, then you think, oh, there's monsters or whatever the horror movie was.
So no Jeff, just Max on the horror trip.
Yes,
for
the horror trip.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, because you know all your fans, I'm sure you hear this from a lot of people. We love the fact that you share pictures of things in your social media. And I think everybody's favorite picture, one of my favorites is, it might have been when you got married, but it's you and your husband. You're in this gorgeous dark blue dress, and you're in front of a fireplace. And you're kind of like that. It's like, to me, it's just like such old, old movie glamour.
Yeah, and he's licking my foot in that picture. Yeah, and you know what? That was the only decent picture that wedding photographer took. We hired this woman, and she had a great portfolio, and the wedding pictures, none of them came out except for that picture. But that picture's hilarious. It's like it sort of speaks to our relationship.
You know, and that's what I always think when I see it. I go through the things. I'm like, oh, I love it. There's a love. Oh, and it's hot. Oh, no, a foot. And then there's like an old Hollywood lamp. It's like, okay, this is kind of a gable and Lombard look. Then I think, oh. you got to have fun. And I get the feeling, and I'm going to say something. Oh, yeah, okay, James from Tucson is listening, and he's someone who actually first got me to go to the steampunk thing out there about 10 years ago. But he said, the show is good, and, let's hear it for the earring bling. And, oh, she's got steampunk earrings, even better. You know, that's great. Thank you. And, yeah, it's great. I think, like I said, when I see that and hear you talk, and read about your family, I think that you probably have heard something that I also hear, and I've been married a long time too, but I heard a couple of people say, you know, you guys laugh too much to be married. And I picture people to think that about you and Jeff.
Yes, but you know what? Somebody sent me, I guess it was a card or something, and it had like two really, really old people, and they were acting silly. And the inside of the car said, I hope you and Jeff will always act like the idiots you are. And I laughed at that because I thought, that's what we do. We make each other laugh, and it's a lovely way to be. I don't think I could be with somebody who was really serious.
Well, it would be. So it's like, that's a perfect card. I know you could. Please tell me that's one you've saved.
Please tell you that it's. Oh, of course I did. I saved everything. I have my diaries from when I was in high school. It's incredible. Oh. It's incredible to read them, and you see that it's always like, you know, looking at this boy or that boy, or my heart was broken a million times, and it's just very, very strange to look at it. It's like having a younger version of yourself right there, and you can read it and see it.
You know, it's like I always want to tell some young person, look, I know you are terribly heartbroken at the time, but I can promise you one day you're going to look back and go, oh, I am so glad.
Yeah.
I am so glad I didn't end up with that. Yeah. It was not meant to be.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Carolyn,
that's right.
Thank you for being so generous with your time, your stories, your humor, your lessons in life that you give us everywhere. And again, I will be sharing how people can find you and all your work on all my social media. Best of luck with Days of Wonder, your new book, and be out April 23rd. And if you don't believe me, ask Michelle. She went to the bookstore in person. And James said he did too. Thank you, James.
You know I love you, and I love to come on the show, and I love the salon. And one of these days I'm going to get you to come to a horror movie with me. I bet I will.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All the way up in New York City?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw a picture. You had a picture someone took of you walking down the street. I think maybe your son took
your
picture.
My
son took your picture of you walking down the street.
He was driving to his apartment, and he happened to see me. I was going to my friend's book reading, and he happened to see me walking. And he said, oh, this is my mom. And he took a picture, and he sent it to me. It's hilarious.
You know, not last September, but the one before, I took my nephew there on a trip for his, that was my 30th birthday. That was my gift for him for his 30th birthday. Taken to New York because he always wanted to see it. And I thought, what if we had seen Carolyn walking down the street?
Oh, that would have been so great.
That would have been so great. I probably just would have thought I would have imagined it. But anyway, best of luck. Days of Wonder, everybody, get it. It's already clocking in at number 48, the first day of pre-ordering. So you know, if you know this is going to be one that goes, sorry, we ran out. We got to get some more. And remember, I just heard something on NPR tonight about supply chains and stuff, you know, especially after the bridge didn't hit yesterday and everybody's worried about how to get stuff there. You better get it. You better order it now. Carolyn, you are so generous, as I said, with your heart, your laughter, your stories, your advice for us, and your fabulous books, and so generous with your time, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so very much for being here again, and I hope you'll always know you've got a place in the genie bottle.
Oh, I'm so happy. Thank you so much. I love your show. Mm-hmm. And please thank your producer, Meg, who is just wonderful helping me find that because I kept losing the link to your show. And I thought she was going to kill me, and I told her I was going to tattoo it on my forehead. And she said she was going to be sure to ask about that on the show.
Oh, that's what she, okay, because she was kept listening and sending me messages. Okay, and I did, okay, I should have trusted her and asked that. But, it wasn't exactly like that. But, yeah, she just said she's very excited about the show and enjoying it. Yeah, she's great. Everything she does for me, she does so fast. And I go, how do you do it fast? She says, I've got a toddler. If I don't do it now, it may never happen.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I love
right.
her.
That's right.
Well, I'm going to close
thank
out
so,
with
so
my
much.
Personal motto. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, you didn't. I just said thank you so much. Go ahead. What's your personal motto?
Well, this is the title of a song I co-wrote with two people, my husband and a guy named Tom Wolf, and it's called Everybody's Got to Swing. And, yeah, and if you want it, I'll send it to you. And if you people, and if you get it, you don't want it. It makes a great. It's a CD. It makes a great cat toy or a coaster. And but if you do like it, I've only got 800 left in the basement, so you got to really take care of it. Okay.
Okay.
Caroline Leavitt, New York Times USA Today best-selling author, new book, Days of Wonder. You've got to get it now and read about it in psychology today. We have all these. Tell us.